Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Your Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. And one of the hottest fronts in that battle space at the moment, of course, involves what has now got Congress's attention in a big way, finally, namely the scandals, one after another, it seems, associated with Benghazi, the attack on our diplomatic mission there that cost the lives of our ambassador to Libya and three of his comrades back on September 11th, 2012. And to visit with us about those important developments and what really is going on here is our first guest, Dr. Andrew Bostom, a man who, despite the fact that he spent his youth becoming trained and highly skilled as a medical doctor, has now devoted much of his energies, thankfully, to the study of Sharia and the threat doctrine that it is and represents to all of us. He is the author, most recently, of a smashing new book entitled Sharia Versus Freedom: The Legacy of Islamic Totalitarianism. He made a very powerful presentation at a panel that the Center for Security Policy was pleased to sponsor up on Capitol Hill yesterday at Hillsdale College. He also made a presentation on Capitol Hill in the House of Representatives. And Andy Bostom, it is great to have you with us to visit about specifically what it is that the legislators, some of whom you met with yesterday, should be thinking about and addressing in the three hearings that are being held this week on Benghazi.
I think the critical issue is to look at our policy in Libya and to see whether it's, of course, there's always an issue with foreign policy, abetting U.S. interests. And in trying to understand whether it is or it isn't, I think we have to begin to unmask the basic failure of imagination that we've had vis-a-vis the Islamic world in general. And that's not understanding the importance of Sharia, which is really a totalitarian system akin to modern forms of totalitarianism. Yes, it's true, it does have a religious aspect in terms of ritual, even hygienic practice with regard to aspects of Islam. But it also has this vast component, which is frankly much more important, that is truly a political ideology, and it includes prominently the doctrine of jihad warfare, this timeless imperative to wage both violent and nonviolent campaigns of Islamization. And this has gone on essentially since the 7th century. So it includes all those elements of strategy and tactics, et cetera. And then it also is political government in the sense of regulations, frankly, that are, again, the critical issue, anathema to Western concepts of freedom and human rights. So there is no freedom of speech. There is no freedom of conscience. Non-Muslim minorities are relegated to really an outcast status. They're not even formally citizens. And they are subjected to all kinds of humiliating and discriminatory regulations. Even Muslim women, the left hates to hear this, but Muslim women are basically chattel under this system. And then, of course, for Muslims themselves are punishments which we in the modern world consider dehumanizing, lashing for alcohol consumption, amputation for theft, and stoning for adultery.
So this is the phenomenon, I guess, known as dimitude in some circles now, relegating people to essentially an enslaved population status in submission to this Sharia doctrine. Do you see, Andy Bostom, as you look around, evidence that, in fact, that is what we are engaged in at the moment. Our administration and its policy.
I think this obeisance to Islamic morays, the whole discussion of this amateurish video, which frankly, just having seen it, just portrayed some of the less salutary aspects of Muhammad's biography, albeit, you know, they were failed cinematography 101. The idea that we're subjecting ourselves to Islamic blasphemy law, the capitulations of the military, whether it's in terms of the treatment, going back to the Qurans and hammocks in Guantanamo Bay, or the constant appeals by our leading generals, Petraeus when he was at the top, the current Joint Chiefs of Staff beseeching Terry Jones not to promote any of his so-called anti-Islamic activities. I'm not aware of us engaging in these behaviors in our previous engagements with totalitarian systems, whether it was fascism or communism.
Mm-hmm. This is really the crux of the matter, it seems to me, that we are, as we'll be talking about, I know, at greater length with Diana West momentarily, we are missing the nature of the threat. And we are, in fact, intensifying it by submitting, whether it's by engaging in what amounts to Sharia blasphemy practices or in other forms of submission. Andy Boston, one other manifestation of this, I guess our friend Andy McCarthy calls it willful blindness on the part of the U.S. government, has been the president's insistence that what we're up against has really nothing to do with any of this. It's just about Al-Qaeda. And not only that Al-Qaeda represents the full extent of the enemy population, but that it is on the path to defeat or being decimated or however else he wishes to communicate this notion that it's in retreat. What is your estimation of why this is being so dreadfully mischaracterized?
I think we're coming to a phase in the West where this sort of cultural self-loathing, you know, our engagement now in these wars and the way we've conducted them, may be the apotheosis of this trend of just a completely self-destructive self-loathing. And our president seems to have totally bought into this mentality that somehow, you know, all the ills of the world are due to Western attempts at hegemony and colonial, this is all the detritus of the colonial enterprise, and we are a guilty people. We are a guilty civilization, and he is actualizing policies, it seems to me, based on this mindset. And Al-Qaeda is a great example. On the one hand, they're not even Muslims, according to our president and his advisor. They're some sort of vague a manifestation of extremism that has nothing to do with Islam, that has nothing to do with Muslims. It's a sui generis phenomenon or something. But we are palpably wrong in almost everything we do.
That's such a telling insight, Andy Boston. It really speaks to the psychology of this guy, and we'll be speaking a little bit more momentarily with Dr. Paul Kenger about his upbringing and influences that may have helped shape this hostility to the United States. But to the extent that it really is translating now into fundamentally misunderstanding the danger that's being posed to us, and therefore making absolutely impossible our success in contending with it. It really is a disaster of the first order, and something that I pray we will have members of Congress addressing in the course of these hearings starting this week, and I'm sure continuing into the future. Andy Boston in our panel yesterday, and by the way, folks, if you want to see this, I commend it to you with the greatest of enthusiasm. It was a superb discussion. It is available online. Check it out at securefreedom.org. It was about an hour and a half long with presentations by our guest, Andy Boston, our next guest, Diana West, and a third highly esteemed colleague, Stephen Coughlin, and both the presentations and the questions and answers were just absolutely superb. Andy Boston, we're going to have to wrap at this point, I think. I just want to say thank you extraordinarily from the bottom of my heart for both your appearance yesterday with us and on Capitol Hill, and this important new contribution to our understanding of the danger we're facing, namely the new book, Sharia versus Freedom. God bless you, sir. I hope that you will come back to us very soon, and in the meantime, that you will keep up, as you do through your writing at PJ Media and elsewhere, your extraordinary commentary on all of these issues. It couldn't be more needed at this particular moment. Next up, we'll speak with Diana West, get her take on this Sino-Sharia phenomenon. Straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Diana West, one of our regular features here at Secure Freedom Radio, I'm very pleased to say, who also graced us yesterday as part of the panel discussion that Andy Bostom and I discussed a moment ago. Diana West brought to the topic her extraordinary insights and articulateness when it comes particularly to matters involving this submission to Sharia. And in fact, Diana, you used a phrase that I thought was quite memorable in your remarks yesterday. And again, folks, if you'd like to see them, you can find them at securefreedom.org. See no Sharia is how you put it. What does that refer to, and what is going on that we seem not to be able or at least willing to see this enemy threat doctrine?
Yes, well, this is part of the pattern that we've been living with and breathing and just entrenching and becoming utterly submitted to ignore Islam as it affects, as it animates enemies, as it predicts patterns of behavior. This has been taken off. It's been eradicated from our logic processes. And so at this point, we are Islam blind. And it occurred to me in reviewing the events in Benghazi and looking over the cable flow that we have through WikiLeaks, much of it from Libya authored, or some large measure of it authored by Christopher Stevens in his previous years, Islam is essentially decoupled from the behavior and desires of the Libyans themselves. It's sort of surreal. It's almost like a science fictional approach to policymaking, that you take away the central defining force in these cultures. And so that was essentially what I was trying to get across with that phrase. It's literally true. You see no Sharia.
Right. And this predated by some years, at least one of the cables that you referred to, alluding to Die Hard, as I recall, the movie, from Christopher Stevens, that really was indicative of the kind of attitude that a guy who obviously had some hand in shaping the Obama administration's policies brought to the party.
Right. This was nothing that just came about in reaction to the so-called Arab Spring in 2011. This is something you do see developing in the cable flow going back as far as, into 2008. There's probably evidence of it elsewhere. It's a very large body of material to go through. I was looking at what I could find of Stevens' own activities, and he was very drawn to Eastern Libya to try to understand, it seems, what was motivating the Eastern Libyans in particular to go fight Americans in Iraq, because the news in 2007 had come out of these captured documents in Iraq that Libya was sending per capita more fighters in the world to fight Americans in Iraq. And when you look at the way these cables come together, you see a downplaying of Islam, a downplaying of jihad, even as he is reporting on a society drenched in jihad. Jihad is normal. It is a topic of conversation, the pride of the residents of Eastern Libya in the fact that more Libyans are fighting Americans in Iraq is palpable in these cables. He dutifully reports this, and yet he sticks to this notion that it's looking at Al Jazeera propaganda, that it's a sense of a despair over economic or political situation. And then ultimately, in this cable I thought was kind of an aha moment, the Die Hard and Dare Not cable, he actually decides and states that it's the frustration with Gaddafi that is driving this anti-Americanism. And it's, again, it's sort of like adopt the Islamic program, and yes, they will like you. In a sense, removing Gaddafi was right in line with Al-Qaeda, with Muslim Brotherhood doctrine. So we became the implementers of this strategy, this jihad strategy.
Right. And Diana West, of course, you have authored the marvelous book, The Death of the Grown-Up, How America's Arrested Development is Bringing Down Western Civilization, as well as innumerable columns in your syndicated relationships and at townhall.com and at dianawest.net, all required reading. One of the things that you have really drilled down on that exemplifies this see no Sharia mindset is the so-called counterinsurgency strategy devised and for some time implemented by General David Petraeus. Obviously, General Petraeus's star has fallen somewhat now, but what would you want our audience to think about how the warning that you've just described applies in particular to the U.S. military at this moment?
Well, in a sense, we live in a coin world, because I think the doctrine that Christopher Stevens and the Bush administration and, of course, the Obama administration was pushing was this notion, if you do enough to please the Islamic world, you can work with them. But in a sense, in that process, you become a part of the submission. You adopt so much of the Islamic world's view that you lose your own. And I think the counterinsurgency doctrine exemplifies this with guns. It is a matter of pleasing Islamic masters, of satisfying Islamic norms, in order, the idea is, to win them over to your side. But you no longer have a side. Once you've given over freedom of speech, which the military gave over in ordering men to essentially revere the Quran and never speak ill of it, once you give over the notion of outrage over polygamy, pederasty, abuse of dogs, which the military institutionalizes in forcing our men to look the other way at these behaviors, which are norms in Afghanistan, you have given away yourself. You no longer have yourself. And as these men come home with these attitudes towards corruption, everything in Afghanistan is done with money, you know, the jizya, the amounts of you know, persuading people to do things not because they're right or according to the law, but because you pay them, these things are going to seep back into our society. And this tolerance of polygamy, pederasty, et cetera, it's going to seep back in. These are dangerous things. We're no longer ourselves. That, to me, is what counterinsurgency is all about.
Wow. A very troubling warning for our military at a moment when clearly at the senior most ranks we're seeing evidence of considerable departures from the kind of integrity and discipline that has made it the most esteemed institution in a country in which, as you've described, Diana West, with your Death of the Grown-Up, is sorely in need of estimable institutions. Can I just turn quickly to one other issue that I know we need to cover with you, Diana, and that is one of the aspects of the Benghazi Gate affair that has been particularly troubling is this business of not only seeing no Sharia, but ensuring nobody says anything about it either, specifically by blaming a video for the trouble in Benghazi and elsewhere. Give us your read on that, and particularly the prison sentence that has now been meted out to the video maker.
Well, yes, I think it is vitally important that we not lose sight of the need to find out who devised the strategy to blame the movie for Benghazi, how it was disseminated to senior Obama administration officials, including David Petraeus, and who called it back after the president's UN speech on September 25th. This is evidence of collusion that must be exposed. And meanwhile, you have the filmmaker sentenced to 1 year in jail at the same time all of these other things are happening. It's stupendous, really, this confluence of events.
Especially against the backdrop of Hillary Clinton telling one of the family members of one of the people who was killed in Benghazi, one of the former SEALs, that this individual would be arrested and prosecuted.
Yes. The gruesomeness of the story just multiplies all the time. And there's one other aspect of COIN that I'd like to relate to this, which is that the notion of protecting the populations of Iraq and Afghanistan, which is at the heart of COIN, over protecting American forces in the field, I believe is an immoral doctrine. And I am not surprised to see the men who prosecuted this doctrine, General Petraeus, General Allen, and who else, we don't even know how many others, showing such immoral leadership and such corruption of their own personal lives. I don't think it's far afield. I think it's all of the piece with this kind of philosophy.
Symptomatic of a larger problem, one that I think those of us who revere the military and its place in our society as our defenders must take very much to heart. Diana West, thank you again for your appearance in our panel. Check it out at securefreedom.org, folks. And Diana, we will talk with you again next week. Next up, we will speak with Dr. Paul Kanger about his analysis as a historian of the Obama victory over Mitt Romney and what's coming next. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. As Congress prepares this week to conduct hearings into the Benghazi debacle, it must zero in on the true scandal, namely the predictable wholesale failure of Team Obama's embrace of dangerous Islamists overseas and here. Unfortunately, we've seen how readily legislators and the rest of us can be deflected from such an urgently needed focus. That's been the serial effect of Mitt Romney's fecklessness in addressing it squarely in the campaign, official disinformation about some video, and security conditions before and after the attack, Hurricane Sandy, and now the titillating story of General Petraeus' extramarital affair. The good news is that the real issues were addressed brilliantly in a panel sponsored yesterday by the Center for Security Policy. Check it out at securefreedom.org and urge your representatives to do the same. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedomradio.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
We're back, joined by Dr. Paul Kenger, one of the country's, I think, most thoughtful and certainly most articulate contemporary historians, a man who is a professor of political science at the highly esteemed Grove City College in my native state of Pennsylvania. He is the executive director of the college's Center for Vision and Values, and he brings a lot of that to bear in his historical writings, notably one of my personal favorites, The Crusader, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of Communism. He is also the author, most recently, of The Communist, Frank Marshall Davis, The Untold Story of Barack Obama's Mentor. And Dr. Kenger, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. I'm anxious to talk with you about how the man mentored by Frank Marshall Davis pulled off this election.
Well, it's always good to be with you, Frank, and you're too kind in your words. Thank
well,
you very much.
It's all heartfelt and I think well-deserved. But let me just ask you, another of the formative influences, as you know very well, Dr. Kenger, in the young Barack Obama's life, was another, well, revolutionary, self-styled revolutionary, by the name of Saul Alinsky. And I just wonder if, based on your reading and studying of his relationships with these characters, Frank Marshall Davis and Saul Alinsky, the strategy of essentially taking out Mitt Romney came as a surprise, or was it actually very much out of the playbook of Alinsky's Rules for Radicals?
Yeah, it was indeed, Frank, very much out of that playbook. And in fact, if you get the actual book, Rules for Radicals, and you look at the introduction, Saul Alinsky dedicates it to what he calls the first revolutionary and the first rebel, the first radical, Lucifer. He actually dedicates the book to Lucifer. He really does. It's actually there. He actually says it.
And it goes downhill from there.
Yeah, in that book, he talks about you take your target, you isolate it, and you demonize it, which is very much Lucifer-like thinking, I would imagine.
Yeah, to be exact, rule 11, Paul.
They isolated him, they demonized him, they vilified him, and they turned him, they transmogrified him into this political monster. I live in western Pennsylvania, and I get my TV stations. I actually get Eastern Ohio stations, Youngstown, among others. And Ohio, of course, was the battleground state for months. Even before they started advertising the end of the campaign in western Pennsylvania, I got to see all the ads in Eastern Ohio. And I got to tell you, Frank, Mitt Romney was so far behind after just months of the Obama team saying that Romney recommended sending the entire auto industry into bankruptcy, after they portrayed him as this rich millionaire who doesn't care about people and sits around in his house in his tuxedo. It's just classic class warfare stuff, which is something else that Saul Alinsky did. So that's what they did, and it worked. It worked just enough to give him a couple percentage victory and for Obama. Obama got reelected, Frank. He's the first president to be reelected with fewer electoral college votes and fewer popular votes than any president in history.
Mm. It's a stunning, stunning insight into how actually this race was run and the closeness of it in the final analysis. Dr. Kenger, talk to us a bit about the second Obama administration. I realize that as an historian, you're more accustomed to looking backwards than trying to do crystal ball gazing. But knowing what you know of history, knowing what you know particularly of the personal history of Barack Obama, and as I mentioned, these mentors, among others, we could add Jeremiah Wright and the revolutionaries Bill Ayer and Bernadine Dorn Rashid Khalidi, the Islamist. What do you expect will be the characteristics, particularly in the national security and foreign policy arena, of the Obama administration in the next 4 years?
Well, in foreign policy, I see again more favoring of Muslim governments, frankly. I mean, more favoring of groups like the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. I mean, historically speaking, it was 1979 under Jimmy Carter that Iran, that we lost the Shah, and Iran went to the Ayatollah Khomeini. And I'm very fearful that we might see an Iranian-type replay, even if not quite that extreme, but extreme enough, in places like Egypt, places like Libya. Who knows what's going to happen in Syria? That's the Middle East. I'm very worried about what will happen with Russia. Mm. I mean, here's
more
president.
Flexibility.
Yeah, I mean, it's a president that Dmitry Medvedev and Vladimir Putin just love, basically endorsed. And Obama had said, "Well, I'll have more flexibility after the election." And Medvedev said, "Oh, great, I'll transmit that to Vladimir." Well, it's now after the election, so we're going to see what they do there. And also, historically speaking, I think I'm even more worried, Frank, about the domestic implications. I mean, this is the 100th anniversary of the election of 1912, which really launched the modern progressive movement under Woodrow Wilson. The Progressive Party platform of 1912 called for universal health care. Well, the progressives are, if anything, they're patient. That's what they believe. They believe in this type of Fabian socialism, where, year by year, you just chip away and chip away and chip away. Well, 100 years later, 2012, they finally got their universal health care. And so now I see more wealth redistribution, more government centralization. I see this growing government class, if you will, where I'd love to know, Frank, what percentage of people voted for Obama who are on food stamps, who are collecting unemployment benefits, who are on welfare. I'd love to know the percentage of people who voted for Obama who are work for the federal government or in government unions. And all those numbers are expanding, I'll tell you what, probably well beyond 47%.
Right. I'm not sure whether the crosstabs of the exit polls will give us that level of detail, but you're right. It would be fascinating to know. Dr. Paul Kenger is our guest. He is the author, among other things, of Dupes, How America's Adversaries Have Manipulated Progressives for a Century, very much on the point you've just made. Dr. Kenger, let me ask you about one other aspect of something you touched on there a moment ago. Give me a compare and contrast, if you will. You being an academic, you can do this sort of thing, of the treatment that the president's conduct towards these Muslim nations, notably in the sort of microcosm of Benghazi, the attack there and the aftermath. Compare and contrast that, if you would, with sort of the reaction in the press and politically to the Iran-Contra affair of President Reagan's second term.
Yeah, the difference is stunning, Frank. Here was Benghazi right before the election, beginning September 11th, 2012. I mean, this was something that if the president was George W. Bush, the media would have absolutely seized this and used it to totally torpedo his reelection bid. Go back to Iran-Contra. It was November 25th, 1986, that Ed Meese, working with President Reagan on this, they got together, they called a press conference, and they fully publicly disclosed precisely what happened. And the media reaction to this, I mean, they didn't just happily accept it and then move on and then ignore it, like they have with Benghazi and Obama. They were ferocious. I mean, they went after these guys with reckless abandon. It was on all the TV networks. I mean, you remember Colonel Ollie North testifying in his Marine uniform, Admiral Poindexter, talking to these glaring interrogators while he would puff on his pipe and consult with his attorney, Brendan Sullivan. They kept coming. Bill Clark, you and I both know Bill Clark. The Senate Security Policy has been great to Bill Clark. I'm his biographer. Clark told me a story about December 1986, when this is just a few weeks after Meese and Reagan disclosed what happened, and Clark went back to the Department of Interior. He was there. They were going to present a portrait of him, going to have a nice little public ceremony. Clark is there for this special moment. And who's there but the media is shoving microphones in his face saying, "Judge Clark, what about Iran-Contra?" They followed everybody who worked for Reagan. They
dogged him. Paul, we have to let you go at that. We'll look forward to visiting with you further about all of this. Dr. Paul Kenger.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by one of my all-time favorite people, Claudia Rosette. She is a world-class investigative journalist, indeed has done extraordinary work over her career on exposing, among other things, Saddam Hussein's notorious oil for food program, and shedding much light in that context and in many others on the appalling performance of the United Nations. And Claudia, it's always good to have you back. And it's like my friend Greg Garrison says, like being a mosquito in a nudist colony. I don't really know quite where to begin with you, but let's, because of your background and expertise, let's start a bit on the UN. We have had the spectacle, and I think that's the only way to describe it, of the United States begging its way onto the UN Human Rights Council again. Remind us what the nature of that operation is and why we shouldn't want to have any part of it, let alone pleading to be, again, one of its members.
Well, the problem with the U.S. being part of it is it legitimizes, it lends legitimacy to an outfit, a council of the UN that simply doesn't deserve it. The U.S. was reelected to a second three-year term on the UN Human Rights Council this week, thereby obtaining the chance to join such arbiters of human rights as Pakistan, Kazakhstan, Venezuela was just elected, who all of which got more votes from the UN General Assembly than did the U.S. You know, one of the questions I'm very curious about, I don't have answers for you yet, Frank, is exactly what did the U.S. promise to the countries that did vote for it in the General Assembly. But the Human Rights Council, which was used to be the Commission on Human Rights, which got so bad it was chaired by Libya under Gaddafi and was finally dissolved, you know, as utterly hopeless. Even the UN could see it was hopeless. It was then reconstituted as the current Human Rights Council, which is turning out to be just as hopeless, and which, for instance, produced the Goldstone Report, just had Richard Falk give yet another of his anti-Semitic talks to the United Nations General Assembly.
Calling, among other things, as I understand it, Claudia, for he was calling for the creation of a world government founded or centered in Istanbul, Turkey. Sounds a lot like the caliphate to me.
And calling for a boycott of industries that do business with Israel. And this is part of the, again, the Human Rights Council has turned out to be, as was its predecessor, obsessively focused on the democratic state of Israel, its main obsession. It's one standing item on its agenda, while all sorts of other things go by. And this is the place where the procedure is now that all countries are reviewed every couple of years by this council, including the U.S., which put in a sort of obsequious self-criticism when our turn came round, including, you know, bringing before the Human Rights Council Arizona's immigration law, you know.
Just makes you want to retch. Claudia, let me ask you this. We're told by Susan Rice, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, and by some accounts, a candidate for the next Secretary of State of the United States, that, well, we have to be at the UN Human Rights Council because we need to be there to speak out against those who are engaged in these sorts of travesties, including members of that council, against the human rights of their people, and to stand up for Israel. What do you make of this logic and kind of the more generally, Claudia, the point that you sort of alluded to a moment ago, what did we promise to get on for this purpose, the kind of corruption that is, rampant in this organization?
Look, with Susan Rice, her sort of two biggest moments during the 4 years or almost 4 years she's just spent as President Obama's envoy to the U.N., have been first leading from behind, working on the resolution in which we led from behind, setting the precedent, if you like, that we needed permission of the Arab League to go to the assistance of people Gaddafi was threatening to murder wholesale. And then her next big moment, this one was much bigger on the American radar, was to... by the way, consent of the Arab League being more important than consent of Congress, as this played out. And her next big moment was going on five Sunday TV news talk shows the Sunday after the September 11th attack in which our ambassador was murdered along with a diplomatic aide and two former SEALs in Benghazi, Libya. It was Susan Rice who was not in the chain of command, but who came out to be the face of the administration, telling the American public that this was all due to a spontaneous mob which just happened to acquire heavy weapons, a story which was on the face of it absurd, yet repeated on one show after another that morning by our ambassador to the UN as the official line. And what she has not managed to do while ambassador at the UN is stop the kind of thing that just happened with Richard Falk speaking to the General Assembly. She has not managed to stop such things as UNESCO is still sort of looking for any way it can get back its U.S. funding, which was withheld by law, by U.S. law, after UNESCO welcomed the Palestinians to full membership. Which is basically a Palestinian detour around the administration policy, official policy, that there must be direct negotiations with Israel. That is the path to statehood. And who is also, right now, the Palestinians are again looking for an upgrade in their status at the UN General Assembly so far the U.S. has failed to stop that.
We will be watching with considerable interest whether when the president now has new flexibility, as he likes to say, he will continue to be at least professing an opposition to all of this or not. Claudia, as we speak, there are reports that Israel has successfully assassinated a top Hamas operative, Ahmed Jabari, who headed its military wing, as they call it. This will presumably bring down a whole new round of recriminations against Israel for acting in its self-defense. I'd like you to speak to that, if you would, from your perspective as a close monitor of the United Nations and the international community, as it's called. But also, if you'd comment as well, if you would, on a report that Adam Credo has at the Washington Free Beacon today, that the makeup of the Democratic caucus in the Congress is likely to be much more hostile to Israel after this latest election, mirroring presumably the hostility that, as you've indicated, we've seen some considerable evidence of out of the Obama administration.
Yeah, you're right that all this criticism is likely to come down. Israel has done a perfectly reasonable thing. It has defended itself. There has been a barrage again, a barrage of rockets out of Gaza into Israel. Remember that Israel withdrew fully from Gaza, leaving them the tomato hothouses and everything else. As part of what was supposed to be a roadmap reinforced by the quartet, the U.S., Russia, the U.S., everybody was going to be helping to produce peace, what they've gotten is round after round of attacks. So Israel has done absolutely what it needs to, and in actual fact is very likely to have to do much more, because the message of the message that the U.S. has been sending is that it really isn't there. You know, who does have Israel's back? Hard to say right now, except Israel. And, Frank, this has bigger implications worldwide because, as countries like China, Russia, large countries with big militaries rebuilding them, doing business around the world with enemies like Iran, which is right now busy working on the nuclear bomb, as they see that the policy of the Obama administration is to look for proxies for American power, or sort of just sort of step back and say, let some second-tier player or other set handle it. In other words, let Turkey carry the ball in parts of the Middle East. Let Brazil take care of Latin America. And let the United Nations take care of any problem that is just more of a headache that we want to deal with. This is what's going. More and more of this will start to happen.
Yeah. From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.